candidate for governor wrote out a $1 million check for his own campaign. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
I got a gluteus maximus picture in the mail. Jim thinks I should get more. It's Dan McKay on the right.
I can't support Trump. I'm reluctant to support Hillary. I'm holding out for another candidate. This is Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and I'm joined on the political left by Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, Natalie. It's so exciting to have the whole team here again.
The band back together. And on the political right by Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning.
I thought she was going to say on snare drum.
And we are here after a historic moment where we have a female candidate of a major political party who has secured the nomination, Hillary Clinton.
The sky is falling.
I got a call from the Salt Lake Tribune this week asking, how big of a deal is this? And I'm not going to support her. I'm not going to vote for her. But I think it's a very big deal. And it's about time.
So that means you're going to vote for Donald Trump?
Nope. They asked me that. And I said, nope. but that's – we can talk about
okay,
that, Jim.
Okay, we can talk about that.
But I how big of a deal is it to have a woman in this role in this day and age right now?
I think it's epic. I mean, this says to our daughters, this says to our wives, this says to our nieces, this says to our spouses that are female. The glass ceiling is gone in the United States of America. Amen.
Yeah.
I don't think people ought to vote for somebody because they're a woman or a man, but it's still historic, and you should call the elephant in the room an elephant.
Dan, I think our listeners know you well enough to know your, you know, political persuasion, and you won't be supporting Hillary Clinton, but she is qualified to be president. I mean,
yes.
If you've been Secretary of State and a senator from a big state.
If you go back to the beginning of the history of the United States and look at the number of interesting characters and slash crooks slash interesting individuals, I tried, Natalie.
Yeah.
Certainly under those qualifications, absolutely, she's prepared. I will say from a foreign policy experience, she's more experienced than several of our presidents have been. From a business acumen experience and from a legal training perspective, mm-hmm. she's more prepared than several. So I think if you're looking at a resume only and saying this is the ideal of how to break the glass ceiling, to Jim's point, I think Hillary is a great example of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Look how nice he is, Natalie.
Well, I mean, I think she's an incredibly talented woman. I just disagree with her on some policies, so it becomes a problem for me.
I'm sick right now
in
my throat.
What would you predict is going to happen with Bernie Sanders? What do you think is going to be the exit strategy? Do you think he has a chance at being the VP slot? Would Hillary ever do that?
No.
Nope.
It's not going to happen, and he would be a terrible choice.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You need a... That would just be all wrong. But there will be a fringe, never anybody but Bernie crowd that are going to be there. But when the ultimate reality of what's going to happen in Philadelphia next month dawns on people, and it comes down to Hillary or Donald, Democrats anyway, progressive people are going to go with Hillary. Now, whether they can get that energy of the millennials, whether they're going to be able to get all of that, I don't know. But certainly you're going to have two things. A bunch of people stay home that were Bernie people. I don't know what percentage. Mm-hmm. But you're also going to have the vast majority of Bernie people going, all right, this is an easy choice.
Dan, do you give any probability for a third candidate to emerge? And I'm not trying to ignore Gary Johnson, you know, as a libertarian, but I'm talking about a third candidate in the anti-Trump world in the Republican Party to emerge.
I don't think either party can rule out a third-party candidate, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, might make it even a fourth-party candidate. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think either party can rule that safe.
So it could be exciting still. But...
Because look at Bernie, right? Let's just take Bernie for example. I know you asked me about Trump. Mm-hmm. But what he's done is phenomenal from a Democratic rallying point. He has the heart of the party. Hillary has the mind of the party. Mm-hmm. So if you look at what he has done, now, Senator Sanders was successful in his political career. You go back and look at his victories when he first got into offices. He's successful in taking out Democrats in Democrat seats, not taking out Republicans. If you look at that, if I'm the Democratic Party, I'm worried because Bernie might be on a Thelma and Louise mission. He might join James Evans in the car where they hold hands and speed this car right off the cliff. But at the end of the day, he might be the ruiner for the far left side of the Democratic Party. And you got Gary Johnson or some other type of candidate. You could have the former governor from New York take on that position for the Republicans. But you've got that potential as well on the Trump side of things. As a result, I don't think either party can rule it out.
I think, Jim, both of us should ask Dan, who is the mind of the Republican Party right now?
Oh, my gosh.
Mitt Romney's not
the mind.
Yeah, it hasn't.
Right?
He hasn't
if
stuck.
If anybody is, it's Paul
it's
Ryan.
It's Paul Ryan.
If anybody is, because everybody, there's a guttural response from Paul Ryan when Trump says racist things about the Hispanic judge who is presiding over his case. You know, the Hispanic judge was born and raised in the United States, but has Hispanic heritage. But apparently
he's,
yeah, that whole thing. But his guttural response from Paul Ryan and his response is exactly what the head of the Republican Party is saying, which is, I can't believe he's saying this stuff. Is he really our nominee? But I guess he is.
Jim, you poked a little fun at me about, so you're not going to vote for Hillary, you're going to vote for Trump. I just have to tell you that I can't go there. And for me, it's a matter of conscience. You know, everyone talks about religious liberties, religious freedoms, whatever. In a similar kind of way, I can't support
what is
Donald
so,
Trump.
I mean, I understand why people wouldn't support Trump.
Uh-huh. Oh, but you
and I'm trying to be
generous.
I mean, I see Hillary as Ms. Moderate. Mm-hmm. Don't see, she's not an extremist in any way, shape, or form. It's one of my great disappointments in Hillary Clinton that we know what we're going to get, and it's going to be pretty darn vanilla in foreign policy and in economic policy and in the rest. I can't envision one breakthrough or one dramatic FDR kind of thing. I mean, why would a moderate, reasonable person, if you were ever going to vote for a Democrat, this would be
the year. You know, so to me, she's part of a political machine that's existed for decades that I'm not, you know, it doesn't represent the future to me. I don't find her particularly trustworthy. The whole Benghazi, the email servers, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. And then her policies on where she wants to take health care, even doubling the minimum wage, those aren't my policies. I'm a conservative, and they're not my policies. So I don't go there, and I can't do Trump, and so I will write in or continue to hope for a third-party Republican.
I might get 2 votes for president this year, Jim. Mine and Natalie's.
Could I go so far? Hey, we don't have a lot of time left in this segment, but I just got to ask you guys. You guys are both legislators. I understand in the last week you got something in the mail from Larry Flint of Hustler Magazine. Give us the details. Give us the color commentary.
Did you know it was coming?
We knew it was coming.
No, but I mean, did you know that day? Did you just open it the way I did?
How did you know it was coming?
Yeah.
He said it in the press. He came out in Politico. You know, he made a statement that, hey, Utah, after Senator Weiler's resolution against, you know, declaring porn a public health crisis, Jim loved that resolution. As a result of that resolution, Larry Flint said, oh, great. Well, let me help them on their public health crisis.
And it wasn't just to people who supported it. It was to
everybody got it. Because Jim didn't support the resolution.
Exactly.
What happened? You got to your mailbox.
The porn was ineffective for Jim, from what I've heard.
It really was not the way to my heart, so to speak. And so it wasn't tough for me. I just went out to the mail. So there was the Utah Air Conditioners Association magazine. And there are so many. There's a variety of magazines that you just can't even imagine that legislators get. And there was a plain brown envelope. I just opened it up. And there was another envelope inside it that was clear. And it had a lady without any clothes on, but with her back. So I said, oh, this is Mr. Flynn. And I went, I love America. I love the First Amendment. I love the fact that people can send things that are going to be doggone offensive to people. That's what the First Amendment is about.
Give us the other side. Give us the
troubling
side.
Okay, but think about this. Okay, do you remember who the return address was?
It was
like
initials.
L&L Publications, right? Or I can't remember what the publication.
LF, probably.
Something
Larry
publication.
Flint, right.
But it was not Hustler Magazine. See, you can't go in and talk about, I'm giving porn, and I'm going to be on the up and up, and I'm doing this thing as a public service type of thing. You can't go in there and hide who it is or what's in the envelope.
Wow, wow, wow.
Thank you,
Senator
Todd Weiler.
My kids could have gotten that, Jimmy.
Hey, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We're going to go to our next segment and talk about the Utah governor's race after this break.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I can't contain my two co-hosts here because, you know, we were talking about porn and they keep talking about it, so we're going to talk about it a little bit more. We have to thank someone who's been on this program before, Senator Todd Weiler, for him sponsoring a bill which passed that was a resolution that declared porn a public health crisis in our state.
Yeah, and that's kind of what bred this whole pornography thing appearing in all our inboxes and stuff. And I thought that what Jim or Todd was doing was a valuable conversation. It is at the forefront of a national conversation that did not exist really prior to his resolution. And for that, I take my hat off to Senator Weiler for at least starting a conversation that has grown nationally.
And Jim, do you agree just on that point that we should be talking about what porn's doing in our
world? On a list of 50 of the top issues, we're having a discussion about something that the Utah legislature can do very little, if anything. And the legislature, this same legislature in their piety, refuses to talk about the public health crisis of 125,000 poor Utah families that could have health care if they would get aside from their ideology. That's what kills me.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, all right, be pompous. Let's talk about porn and we'll have it unanimous and whatever and blah, 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 blah. But you know what? Something they could actually do something about in a real public health crisis. They are not there. They're not there.
Dan, that's
they're
not
there
a bad
to the
point.
Tune of $4.5 billion of our current budget. You're absolutely right. $4.5 billion of our current budget, we're doing nothing about it. So I appreciate that, Jim. So, okay, so we get the envelope. We kind of left everybody hanging during the little break there. We get the envelope. It's got this crazy address on it. And if you rip it open, sure enough, there's what Jim described there as the lady with her barrier end for all
to
consume.
And so you open it up in front of your six-year-old.
Yeah,
and
that's
sort of
the problem, right? Luckily, you know, the legislative wives have a little Facebook group. They all talked, and one of them knew it was coming, and so everybody was on the hunt, right? So they all knew it was coming.
Let's take this out. It's the worst scenario imaginable. Some seven-year-old boy is there, and you open it, and that boy sees a butt of a woman. I mean, is that really... I mean, there's a lot of stuff, and remember, these kids are two clicks away from a lot worse. I am just saying... You don't believe in global warming as a legislature because there isn't enough scientific evidence. But boy, you're on board here because porn causes all these things. I don't know. I'm still.
It is the attitudes and the changing perspective that I think that you should be on our side on, Jim, which is the objectification of women specifically with pornography is a real problem. And it is putting the women in our society in a position where they are objects, not people, and they should continue to be treated this way. And it is shown over and over that the more exposure to pornography, the greater danger women are in from those individuals.
I don't accept that as a premise. I think the science is still not conclusive, and you have a legislature that starts out with a moral
objective. We should have the global warming people start researching that, and we'll have the porn people start researching global warming.
And I'm no expert on this type of policy or anything, but I'm inherently uncomfortable with people receiving pornography in the mail that they didn't ask for.
Yeah.
And then I'm inherently uncomfortable with both of what you said, Jim. In other words, I don't mind it being talked about as a public health crisis, and we should also be giving the due, you know, public debate to providing health care to Utah families. They're both important.
First Amendment makes us uncomfortable. That's the whole purpose.
Yeah,
and the speech we're protecting is a speech that's awkward. There it is.
Let's talk about, to give a transition, let's talk about the constitutional right to give money to candidates. Jonathan Johnson gets another big check from his sugar daddy, Patrick Burke.
Whoa. Okay, fine. I'll let you get that.
Well, I don't know. That's just a term I use, you know,
to
capture. I guess it's another $250,000 and total contributions from Byrne are $850,000. That's... Wow.
Substantial amount.
Yeah. And
I have not received the same contributions.
I would say that they're close and in alignment. And if I had a lot of money and someone I really cared about was running and I wanted to support him. I mean, I guess it's okay. And
it's once disclosed. Once you have a billion, right?
Yeah.
What's a million?
Yeah, and it's disclosed and everyone can see it.
Yeah.
It does beg the issue, though, of what on earth is going on in a governor's race where all this fundraising stuff is what we're talking about. We're not talking about the big issues.
But fair.
I mean, I want to be talking about
the problem is, and this is, I know it's campaign tactical strategy, one-on-one, the senior statesman, the incumbent, doesn't ever take debates. Mm-hmm. And here we are again, same issue. So debates, instead we're left talking about these things because candidates are not talking. They're not inviting a discourse about policy. Mm-hmm. They're inviting a discourse about money because, candidly, it's the only thing we can see.
Yeah. Jim, you have an opinion there?
Look, I just turned to the page that not enough Utahns look at. Here's Gary Herbert's contributions. You talk about sugar daddies. Friends of Gary Herbert PAC, $1,250,000. Who knows who's in there? You can wander anything you want through a PAC. You look at names like John Huntsman Sr., $60,000. Utah Association of Realtors, $52,000. Deloy Hansen, $50,500. You're talking about Vivint, $50,000. Console Energy, $45,000. And I could and should. Dewey Reagan, the billboard guy, $37,500. David Simmons, $35,000. Is this illegal? No. But you look at Zions Bank, $50,000, Scott Anderson, who's the president, another $50,000. People who are doing business regularly and continually with the state are lining up, giving hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you say, well, that's the way the system is. Well, it ought not to be that way.
Yeah, and it's no wonder the common person gets disillusioned. You know, because seem like the cards are stacked and the system's rigged. And where's my voice?
But you are then closing the system for people. Jim, self-funding? I mean, should you be able to self-fund your own race?
Of course.
Okay, so you are closing off the political realm to those who are wealthy. And while that is one laudable measure, I would argue there ought to be more thought than that.
Yeah, and really the best thing we have going for us is disclosure, which we have.
Let's think about some of our best governors and where they come from a personal financial standpoint. Mm-hmm. I would argue, and I'm not going to name names.
Why?
But I'm going to think of Levitt. I'm going to think of Bangeter. I'm going to think of Matheson. I'm going to think of, you go down that mm-hmm. list, okay? And I can go, and notice I didn't keep it all Republican. I'm thinking of strong mm-hmm. governors that have been successful in the state of Utah, okay? You go down that list and you look at their heritage and what they accomplished, they were not wealthy when they walked into office.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that just making this about having more money, self-funding if you're taking on an incumbent or whatever, I think that's a great disservice. Campaign contribution limits doesn't solve it. Neither does PAC contributions.
Look how vicious and ugly it's become. What did the two biggest lobbyists, Pignanelli and Foxley, arrange for this governor? Mm-hmm. For him to come down to their office, they got a cash register out in front, and you get to spend, you write a check, and the governor will sit there and listen to whatever you have to say. And those clients were just lined right up. Well, you say that's their First Amendment speech. Well, what about the other people? What about the people of the state of Utah? I'm not trying to be a demagogue here. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the whole system. It is skewed. It's a terrible, sick, miserable system. When Rocky Mountain Power, for example, didn't get their way, and they came rolling in with $1 million in the last day to do a completely atrocious, miserable, ugly thing with solar power to benefit themselves. They made a whole bunch of lobbyists there, and we saw the debacle in the House of 13 legislators turn around and vote for Rocky Mountain Power when they had just voted the other way because they got squeezed. That is ugly. That's what our money system does. And we're one of only four states with completely unlimited money. It's sick. It's sick. And it is the basis of the thing that could destroy our democracy, both on a national level and here.
Jim, I think you have good points, but I got to tell you, I'm just getting depressed listening to this program.
Yeah,
I
mean, you're right.
I just got to get to something happier.
I found a dollar the other day.
Well, I thought of the happy thing to me is I think we should talk a little bit about what's happening in the state, all the good things happening.
That's not going to make you happy, what my opinion is.
I think it is. I mean, wages are up. Our job growth is strong. We just got this incredible ranking from 247 Wall Street, applauding our state's entrepreneurship and our small businesses. Right now, I would say that elected officials deserve a lot of praise for the good positioning of our state.
You know, I saw the seven, we ranked seventh for fiscal responsibility. Yay! And the Republicans are continually saying, look how fiscally responsible we are. Except it's not true. It's part of all of this mythology that everybody accepts. If you added in funding Utah education to even the mid-level of states, guess what happens? We dropped down to 42nd or 43rd. So fiscally, we're in great shape, and we're number seven. Why? Because we're cheating our children. So we're looking good off the backs of our children. That is the case with so many parts of state government where it looks like, wow, we're hitting a home run. You go a little bit deeper, and you recognize we got bad leadership.
Dan, this is why, though. I think leaders are acknowledging that we have some issues with public education, and I can see it in the governor's race, particularly with Governor Herbert's aggressiveness towards public education right now.
Yeah. And it's been our number one funding priority since we started having surpluses again, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's where our number one investment has been. And I understand, you know, Jim's concern about that number. He always forgets to report that we're in the top 25 for sure when it comes to performance. So bang for buck, our education, we're doing a great job. Could we always have more? Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and the real problem, and you guys both know this, but just to remind ourselves, it's not that we're taxed too little. It's that we have so many kids.
Yeah.
And we've got to figure out how to either do things in different ways, better ways.
You made us talk about education. Can I go back? And those that move most dramatically year over year in this survey, from the positive to the negative, guess which states they were? Those that implemented full Medicaid expansion. Mic drop.
There you go. Okay, I'm not going there.
Jim, I know I shouldn't feed into your fury here because you're on a roll, but we had an issue that happened, and I'm just going to say two phrases to you. James Evans and wheelchair.
Okay, so like, you know, James has his problems. I hate to hit a guy when he's down. But here's the scenario. It's hard to have a state convention. Even our state convention, you know, as a Democrat. So James's defense is that the Republican rules allow him to call for a, quote, standing vote. That's his defense. Defense against what? There was a crippled lady. She couldn't stand.
She's on the front row.
Who in their right mind wouldn't accommodate that? So now not only was this woman not allowed to vote, but James is going after her. Come on. This is like the Onion.
Yeah, yeah. Dan, we need to go to gripes, but can you give just a Republican side to that?
I don't really have one.
Yeah, I mean,
that was
how
a
do
mess.
You, yeah, how do you not allow a vote of someone attending?
It wasn't that they – that's just it. The publicity is wrong about this. It wasn't that the votes didn't count. It's that he asked them to stand, and when you are unable to stand, you feel as though your vote does not count. But what has been done in past conventions is there is a special section where those in wheelchairs stand and they raise their credentials, not stand. It's the nomenclature that you have to stand that was so objectionable. And I get it. There was some frustrations that way. But there is a section there, and it is throughout, that you can raise your credentials and still be counted. And I would argue she was counted. She's just trying to make a point. And unfortunately, instead of saying, we're going to put our arms around you. We're going to bring you in. James kicked somebody in the wheelchair, and I don't think that was acceptable.
Jim, we need to go to gripes.
Okay, well,
you've been griping the whole program, but I'll give you one more.
I'm going to say something good.
Okay.
Mitt Romney, where are you when it comes time to run for president? That's all.
We need him. I would love it.
Wow, come on, 2 years ago we didn't have this conversation. Well, 4 years ago.
We didn't have Donald Trump
either. He has his Park City policy thing next week, so we're gonna see some Mitt Romney sightings.
Am I invited? Yeah. Not invited again.
Dan, your gripe.
My gripe is that there isn't enough effort to congratulate or take your hat off to those who do well in the community and who are doing good things. I mean, I think that we just miss a number of people who do good things. We keep saying it's politicians or whatever that might be doing a great job. And really, it is the people who are down on their hands and knees, slaving it out to try and make a buck and keep their family afloat, that honestly, I wish that there was more recognition for folks like that.
Yeah, I like it. My gripe concerns the sorry state of the start of this summer. Okay, so people graduate. We started the summer season. We have, John Williams' untimely death. We have the UTA workers' untimely death. The Magna Mother, and I'm just kind of going, this is sad. I've just been in a funk over all of it. And since I don't like to end on a sad note, I'll just say that I still remain very hopeful, and I hope we can get our act together in this community and do better things. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.